Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director, Chief Investment Officer here at Cantor Fitzgerald Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly economic and market commentary. Of course, you can follow me intra week if you'd like on LinkedIn and or X if there is intra week commentary. Let's get right into it. The presentation you're about to see and or hear has been prepared by us, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use by you. Whether you are a financial advisor or an individual investor, you are still expected to make your own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. This is purely for informational purposes, and its accuracy, adequacy, or completeness cannot be guaranteed. So we have had three straight down weeks overall in the equity markets. And okay, it is what it is. That's normal. That's part of investing. That's not unexpected. But what, you know, it's a normal thing to ask a question. Is there something to think about? Should I be doing something differently? Has the fundamental story changed? And the answer is, I don't think so. Big cap tech, which has led this rally, had been doing well. The fundamentals are excellent. We're going to get earnings very soon. But the size and the scope and the scale of the run-up was so much that I think it's normal to get a little bit of a pullback. What's interesting here is you notice I've been including the last month or so the Shanghai Shenzhen 300 Index into the reporting. Part of that is because we have a tactical position awaiting. We own a China ETF in the portfolios. But the other reason is it's just started to perform. And we've been very patient waiting for that to happen. So last week, as an example, the S&P down 3%, emerging markets as a whole down 3.6%, but the largest emerging market, China, was up almost 2%, bringing the year-to-date up 3%. So that's interesting to see this bit of rotation that's taken place. The other thing that's happened is that, of course, the expected dates for the Federal Reserve might begin to cut interest rates, the short-term interest rate, keeps getting pushed out further and further because inflation's remaining stubbornly high. Also, the economy is remaining stubbornly strong. So interesting to see on a year-to-date basis, long-dated treasuries down almost 9%. And the gain that we originally had in the S&P 500, about half of that's been wiped out essentially. Okay, moving on. This is a graph that compares just really for the last, this is year to date comparison of these major indices. What's interesting here, you can see total return of the S&P. I showed you on the last graph, that's 4.5. Developed international, 1, emerging, NASDAQ, only 1.5 now. And there's Shenzhen starting to outperform on a year to date basis. But the other thing you see is as everything's been coming down on these domestic indices, the Shanghai Shenzhen's kind of flatlined. It's down a little. And if instead of looking year to date, and we really want to just cherry pick our data, let's take a look at the last 90 days, or really actually since January 20th to April 19th. So we'll call that 90 trading days. You can see since that period, this is where the NASDAQ's really started to roll over, and the NASDAQ's actually down. S&P is up 3%, developed international up 2.7, almost 3%. And look at the performance of China during this period. So significant divergence going on here. So I say in our business, you're never wrong. You're just early, right? And tongue firmly pointed in cheek there. But this is a nice performance pattern to see for this tactical position that while risk is going off, generally, overall, we're seeing crypto go down, small cap stocks have gone down, big cap tech, which is really, really high quality, has gone down. And then China finally stabilized. They've spent years going through lots of different things. I don't have to rehash all the stuff that's happened in China to make that a very unloved investment. And we've been fortunate to have been obviously accumulating that during this period. But does that mean it's time to move out of large cap tech? Does that mean it's time to reduce our position in large cap tech? Well, maybe. Here's the Magnificent Seven. Magnificent Seven. That's what's driving the NASDAQ composite, right? These are the names. These are the biggest weighted companies. Well, part of the reason that it's down is simply because Tesla is starting to be revalued from this aggressive high growth tech company to an auto manufacturer. And Tesla's being forced to cut prices. We've seen that. And that stock's down 52% from its high, significantly contributing to the weakness in the NASDAQ. Other big names are barely down at all, like Google. But NVIDIA, the big AI chip maker, down almost 20% from its high. And Apple, the largest company in the world by market cap, is down about 17%. All of these names, along with the rest of the Magnificent Seven index, I should say, is down 8%. The rest of the NASDAQ composite is down as well. But there's upcoming dates that really matter. Some of them as early as, well, tomorrow. Tesla's earnings are tomorrow. How are they going to do? I'm not holding my breath for something particularly great there. But then we're going to come with Facebook, or now known as Meta's earnings this week, Google's earnings this week, Microsoft's earnings this week. Then we'll move into Amazon, and we've got Apple, the biggest behemoth of them all, not only earnings on May 2nd. All these companies, you know, in the last few years done pretty good post-earnings, right? But their Worldwide Developer Conference on June 10th. And if the future of the economy rests on AI and AI development, and we've heard almost nothing from Apple about AI and their plans for AI, wouldn't it make sense that this conference this year would be the time to come out with something big, with big news? There's a lot of speculation that that might happen. So getting out of these Mag 7 names at a time when we know they're generating massive amounts of free cash flow, we know they have competitive barriers to entry and are highly, highly protected. I'd say the one exception to that highly protected area would be Tesla, and to a lesser degree, NVIDIA, right? A computer chip, another company can make a faster, better computer chip. But the rest of these have very significant barriers to entry, especially a company like, let's say, Microsoft or Amazon. And of course, those are only down in the single digits. So I don't think it makes sense here to try to time this or to pull out of this. We love these companies for the most part. I'm not a huge Tesla fan, but for the most part, we love these companies. They generate massive amounts of cash, fortress balance sheets, and very significant barriers to entry. We own them through both the S&P 500, which they're all part of, and the NASDAQ Composite Index. So we kind of have twice the exposure there. Let's move on to some of the economic data from last week. We had some mixed data on manufacturing. We started with New York State, our Empire State manufacturing for April. It rose but remained negative, meaning that manufacturing in the New York State area was seemed to have contracted this month in April. New orders, shipments, and employment all remain negative, and the outlook fell, although that was still a positive number. Same time, we got the Philly Fed survey. If you like an advance to that, the Philly Fed survey rose from 3.2 to 15.5. That was way ahead of expectations, and you'd have to go all the way back to late 21, early 22 to get a reading even close to this level. So that's like the national ISMs, the Philly survey is suggesting that manufacturing is actually picking up, although as we just saw, that conflicts with the New York State reading. Also on the manufacturing side, industrial production rose 0.4%, right along with expectations. Capacity utilization went up a tad from 78.2 to 78.4. This is disinflationary. See, this house below 80, and it's been below 80. That's always disinflationary, above 80, seen as inflationary. And I'm sure the Fed and others would like to see that down below that 80 level. We had a surprise reading to the upside for retail sales. Employment is strong. Real wage gains are strong. Retail is going to be strong. And it was. It was up 0.7%, almost double the expected 0.4%. And then February, which had been reported at 0.6, revised higher to 0.9. This is, you know, the sign that the economy still remains strong and that recession is nowhere imminent. Despite the Fed's raising rates, decreasing the money supply by rolling down their balance sheet, the economy remains very strong. Why? Well, the balance sheet's still massive. There's still trillions more in there in the system than there was pre-COVID. Business inventories for February up 0.4% after a no change in January. Nothing really to see here. We then got some data on housing, the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index, which measures the sentiment of builders. Anything above 50 says they're generally optimistic. So out of 51 for the month of March, they're right on that line. They're a little more optimistic than not, but they become pessimistic below 50 and really are having good times for the home builders when you start get to about a 60 reading. Current sales and traffic was up a little bit. Future sales component fell to 60, but that's still a pretty good number. One of the reasons this had been coming up here, you could see this all year, was there was this expectations that first the Fed was done hiking rates and would be cutting. And now with more expectations that the Fed is not cutting this year, which, you know, we've said this quite a bit on this podcast. I think that housing market sentiment is going to stall. We saw that a little bit in the starts and permits numbers for March. Starts dropped an annualized almost 15%. Well, worse than expected after a big gain in February. Permits also fell worse than expected. And I think this is this rate fatigue, this rate, the delayed effect of rates is really having an impact on the housing market. We're starting to see price drops out here in California, particularly San Diego County, where I am, and price cuts. Volume has slowed considerably, but because there's still that lack of supply, prices are softening, as I said, but just very, very little, very, very little. And then existing home sales, again, because of lack of inventory, still remain very anemic. They fell 4.3% annualized in March after that sort of spike up big gain we had in the month of February. Jobless claims, which I think is one of the best real-time indicators of what's happening in the economy, among others, but one of the best is on a weekly basis. What are the initial claims for unemployment? I've said this over and over and over. 200,000 is incredibly low and shows a robust, if not ebullient, jobs market, which means a strong consumer, which means strong retail sales, which means good earnings. It goes on and on and on. It's always all about the jobs and the economy, and they continue to remain in very, very good territory. I've mentioned earnings season at the very beginning when I talked about the Magnificent Seven earnings, quite a few of which are this week. A reason not to be out of the market, I think, a reason not to try to time things, not to react to the fact that the Mag 7 are down 8.5% or, you know, your Microsoft is down or whatever. But here's what we have so far. 70 companies have reported, 56 have beat the consensus estimates, 4 were in line, 10 were below. Average earnings beat or surprise was nearly 10%. So that was that's going very, very well. The estimated forward earnings per share of the S&P 500 now exceeding $250. And so that's one of the things, you know, if in the end, it's always about earnings, and the earnings are coming in great. And we've been through, you know, the financials generally report at the beginning of the earnings season generally, and then you move in a couple of weeks and you get to the tech. And the big tech is what drives the U.S. economy, which is driving the growth. And that's what's starting to come, as I mentioned earlier, this week. So I wouldn't want to be out, wouldn't want to be short. No major economic data today. We've got the PMIs from S&P Global, formerly known as Marquette. We're looking for manufacturing to be 52. We're looking for services to be 52. Those are both positive. New home sales annualized at 670 is the estimate there. Durable goods for Wednesday. Weekly claims down at that 200,000 level. Q1 GDP is looking to be at 2.4%. I followed the Atlanta Fed GDP tracker, and Q2 looks to be accelerating from there, especially seeing what we're seeing in the pickup in manufacturing. Pending home sales, personal income spending, the core the PCE and the core PCE price index. You know, last week or was the week before, we got the CPI and the PPI, incredibly important, big driver of the markets. A positive PCE, meaning 0.3, 0.2, something like that, would be very welcome news for the markets. And a number above or significantly above the expectations would be very bad news for the markets. and could potentially outweigh the impact of whatever earnings news we get, because the market's very, very focused on Fed and rate policy, consumer sentiment on April as well. So Friday is obviously a very, very important day for us. Thanks everybody for tuning in. As I said, it's Monday, April 22nd. I'll be back to you again in a week. Don't forget, this is available on YouTube now with video and slides and graphs and charts, or on any audio only podcast. Just simply tell your smart device to play Slaying Bulls and Bears or play Herb Morgan's podcast. Our job is to make the complex and complicated simple and sensical. Thank you. I'll be back in 1 week.